us your 950 KJR Sports headlines.
All right, kids, here we go. Headlines on Softy and Dick on a Tuesday afternoon right here on 950 KJR. Brought to you, of course, by our friends at Buddy's Goodies and Glass. It's always 420 at Buddy's, baby.
More than anything, I want better execution. Are we clear on that? I want better execution.
Mariners stay three games out in the wild card race. Boston gives them a golden opportunity by losing to Tampa last night. The M's cannot take advantage. They lose 11-2 yesterday. Yusei Kikuchi sucked again, ending in two-thirds, four earned runs against the Astros. Game two tonight, 5-10. Logan Gilbert versus Jake Odorizzi. And Kyle Lewis, by the way, Dick, has a bone bruise. He's now getting shut down for the rest of the year.
Is he entering the pro-size zone?
No.
Okay.
No.
Just checking.
Don't you
just
say that.
Just
don't
checking.
You talk like that. Don't you. You take it back right now.
It was a question. Question, not a comment. Alabama stays at the top of the latest AP poll. Georgia moving up to second. Ohio State, Oklahoma rounding out the top four. Clemson fell to six after their loss to Georgia.
Yeah, by the way, Clemson falling to six is the first time they've been out of the top four since 2017, by the way. Krem TV in Spokane reporting Mark Few was in Coeur d'Alene and had one few too many. He was cited for a DUI yesterday, had a blood alcohol level of 0.119 and 0.120. The legal limit in Idaho is 0.08. So Mark Few's got some splaining to do.
Mm-hmm. And the center that hammered Mark Few's Gonzaga Bulldogs, Mark Vidal, is no longer a Seattle Seahawk.
What?
The Hawks have signed cornerback Gavin Heslop and released the basketball player turned tight end.
That's ridiculous. That's unfair. Twins, Indians, scoreless, bottom three from Cleveland. Pirates lead the Tigers 1-0 in the top of the second. Mets up on the Marlins 2-1 from Miami as we speak. The Rays and Red Sox, by the way, go at 4-10 today from Fenway. Husky Honks going right now.
Touchdown, Washington! Coming to you live from our Honkville studios of Sports Radio 950 KJR. This is the Coors Light Honks. Brass Brewed Coors Light. Keeping Seattle chill.
Make the play!
Brought to you by your Northwest Chevy dealers. It's time for the Honks on your home for the Huskies. Sports Radio 950.
And here come the dogs!
KJR.
All right, kids, here we go. Second edition of the Husky Honks version 2.0 with Greg Lewis, Dick Baird, Cam Cleland, Dave Softy Mahler. And fellas, I got to be honest with you. When I sat here last week and envisioned what today's show was going to be like, I did not envision us on the air talking about a loss to the Montana Grizzlies. So I do have one simple question for three simple people. I want to just give you guys the floor, and Cam, we can start with you. Greg Lewis is here. Dick Baird's here. Cam Cleland's here. Explain to me and the thousands of Husky football fans listening out there, including my mom and dad, by the way, how in the hell did Washington lose to Montana on Saturday? The floor is yours. Go.
Oh, we got beat.
Okay. What? Dick Baird, your thoughts.
I think he very eloquently put it.
All right, that's it for us. We'll see you next week.
Here we go.
At 4 o'clock. Cam, feel free to dive into that a little more. Go for it, pal.
Gary, I'm on Tuesday mode, so I'm thinking about we can discuss it at nauseam. We can go into the breakdowns of it. And I, from the first drive, and we talked about it after the game, and I'm sure you guys hit on it quite a bit because all of us are reeling from it. But if from a breakdown perspective, it looked like to me that some of the guys just weren't as ready as they should have been. And maybe that they took it a little bit lightly, but that's not to say they take it lightly now, because after that game is over, all of them feel like crap. I mean, it's one of those situations. If we want to blame it on one aspects of team game, I'm always going to be on that side. Defense played well. Offense needs to improve a lot. The offensive line needs to get better.
Yeah.
Their execution, talking about John Gruden, need to execute a little bit more efficiently, work together as a group. They have to get better, but this is one of those situations where I'm going to stay on the positive side and be everything is in play for the rest of the year. So how many more times are we going to sit here and say this? Well, from this point on, moving forward, where I sit right now, this season is still well under control.
Okay. All right. Well, Greg, I'm looking at Greg Lewis, and he has a crap-eating grin, by the way, on his face. Mm-hmm. He's bouncing up and down. Either A, he has to go to the bathroom, or B, he's really anxious about getting his takeout over the air. So, Greg, take it away. What happened Saturday?
Well, I don't know if any of those are true, but I'll say this. Saturday was sort of a convergence of that perfect storm that you talk about. happening, not making any excuses for anybody. They did not come ready to play. They underestimated, in my opinion, and I wasn't in the huddles. I wasn't in practice. But it looks like they underestimated their opponent to some degree. They had injuries in one position that was so deep. I mean, four wide receivers that you count on to make plays, and all of a sudden, none of them can play. So that happens. Then you get some key injuries in the offensive line. That happens. Then you play, a Montana team who's super inspired, and I think they game plan better than we did, especially defensively. They decided that they were going to take that chance of slanting and twisting and moving their defensive line, which can create huge holes sometimes because you take yourself right out of plays. But it seemed like every time they hit the right stunt, the right twist, the right sort of combination and pass rush. So all those things sort of collided, and we came out and got our butts kicked. And frankly, the offense didn't play well, and the offensive line, which was supposed to be the strength of this team, had their worst day, in my opinion, over the last season and a half. I have not seen them play that poorly against the competition that they went against.
I thought Kent Bear had a great game.
Yeah.
I mean, he had a solid game plan coming in. He used movement and stunts and blitzes, and it was simple mathematics. They would run three guys against two, or they'd run four guys against three, and they kept coming with the heat. And when Washington was unable to pick up the blitzes, he just kept coming with it. And I thought Kent did a great job. I mean, they really put the Husky offensive line on their heels. I mean, they mixed an even front, and when they're an even front, they would take, like, the inside guys go out and the outside guys go in, and then they'd go to an odd front, and they'd do the same thing. They would just run games, and it was like a blitz package, and that we just didn't recognize it. And I think that was probably the key thing of the whole game, as far as I was concerned, is establishing the line of scrimmage. Their inability to pick up their line stunts. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were just slants a lot of the times with a guy coming off the butt. And so I really thought that Kent did a great job. I really thought I had some real positive things out of it. I mean, I love Richard Newton. I'm telling you, the guy is a war daddy. Mm-hmm. He brings it. He's a miniature Corey Dillon. You know, he's going to take the hit to you as opposed to you hitting him. Best play of the whole game for me, he ran over two guys on the goal line. Not one, but two. To me, that was just that guy, he epitomizes what being a Husky is all about. I was really impressed with him.
Well, I agree with both guys, and I certainly agree with you, Coach Barrett, about what they did defensively. And some of the things that I noticed, too, watching the film again and seeing what they did, and to break it down even more, every time they got into 12 personnel, that is the Huskies, it was their run formation heavy, they did bring 7 and 8. And that really came down to the point where with those zone dogs, too, even when you're in pass formation, they did a good job of bumping out the tackles and giving Dillon a tough time to throw through those lanes. Now, the first drive, they didn't do that. They were in a little bit of nickel. They kind of sat back, wanted to feel what happens. But throughout the game, their ability to bring 7 and 8 and move down and create that kind of on edge with certainly with the guard play and at center, that caused a lot of lanes, a lot of run-throughs, and the running backs couldn't get started. Look, when the Washington football team can only rush for 65 yards, here's the biggest issue. I don't care if you're bringing 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12. You still should be able to move the football and get better on first down. And that was one of the biggest keys, is their inability to really move the football on first down, especially when they wanted to run it.
Well, I mean, we looked so good going down the field right away, and it was a very impressive drive, and we got a score, and we would go back down, and we decided not to kick a 50-yard field goal, and then we decide to kick a 50-yard field goal, and we miss. And I would be remiss myself if I didn't point out that I think they won the kicking game. Montana did. You don't have to win the kicking game. You just can't lose it. And in our particular case, I thought that their punter changed the field. I thought our punter did a really nice job, but their punter changed the field. And then when we force him into seven punts, we decide to only return one of them.
Yeah.
So the other six we're fair catching.
I'll tell you a stat that tells me all I need to know about this game. 4 for 14. Mm-hmm. That's what the Huskies were on third down conversions against Montana. Yeah. It was like Kent Bear was in our playbook.
Yeah.
Because whatever we went to on third, whether it was short, medium, or long, they were in the right stunt, the right blitz to counter that. And that was something that, to me, tells you all you need to know. Because if you can't convert and sustain drives, you're putting your defense back out there time and time and time again. And ultimately, in the fourth quarter, the defense is tired. They're worn down. They've been on the field, you know, the majority of the game. And they give up a play or two. Well, they're not going to hold them forever. But that 4 for 14, to me, is what really broke us down.
And I agree with you, Greg. At 4 for 14, you look at that too, and that's why I harp on the first down play, because when you're in third and long, who wants to sit in 3rd and 12? You take a sack on first down. You're trying to throw early. Maybe you don't hit a check down. The efficiency on first down is what gets you in third and short. But if you're in third and long all game trying to play catch up and every wide receiver that you're throwing to can't get off the ball even in bump coverage, that's putting a lot of pressure on your quarterback who doesn't have that go-to guy. But Cade Otton was the guy there that he could. I mean, he had 8 catches, 82 yards, but still, that wasn't enough.
Yeah, conversely, I don't think you can put it all on the offense. I mean, we didn't get any sacks. We got one sack, and that was a scramble. The quarterback was scrambling, so it really wasn't a pass sack.
Sure.
But, you know, we didn't get any sacks, and they got 3. The difference in pressure was amazing.
Well, Montana scored 13 points. Yeah. So I agree with you, Dick. You can't put it all on the offense, but you can put almost all of it on the offense in this game on Saturday. You scored a touchdown on the first drive of the game. I mean, does Montana have better players than UW has? I don't think so. They got 65 scholarships or 63. UW's got 85. And you mentioned Kent Bear is a former Husky defensive coordinator. And, I mean, he took John Donovan to school in the final 55 minutes of that game. And that came for me and Greg. We'll just go to Greg here. That's the most concerning thing to me, is that there was obviously a change made in scheme by Kent after the first drive, and Washington, for whatever reason, was not able to counter that. And that's disturbing against a team like Montana.
Yeah, I'll say a couple of things. One, you know, I made some comments after the game about the game plan one way, so they stuck with the game plan and didn't make a bunch of adjustments. I wasn't saying that to say specific plays couldn't be changed and introduced. I'm just saying they created a game plan that they thought was the best one to go up against Montana. And with the lack of seasoned personnel, especially at the wide receiver position, they probably didn't want to wholesale change that game plan, you know. And so there wasn't a lot of opportunity, I guess, in their minds to do that. I will say this, though. For our defense to be out there almost the entire game and to only give up 13 points is admirable, but we're a Division I Power 5 team. You expect your defense to make some big plays in a game against a team like Montana, whether it's a sack, an interception, a bunch of tackles for loss, something.
Great point. Great point. We didn't create anything on the defensive side. I mean, we
should against
them.
Montana.
We held them to 10 first downs in the whole game.
That's great against Michigan, but against Montana, let's make some positive plays.
And they only had 230 yards total offense, so that is good defense. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you didn't score on defense. You didn't get any fumbles. You didn't get any interceptions. So, you know, when you lose a game, you all lose it.
Yep.
And I thought there was plenty of blame to go all the way around, but you got to be real careful. You point that finger, there's 3 pointing back at you.
Mm-hmm.
Cam?
100%. Also, too, when you're sitting on that offensive side, and you said it, Greg, every play that Coach Donovan calls and every coach calls is designed to win, right? Nobody calls a play and goes, well, that's going to lose, right? Because if you're in that situation, even if you know a defense is bringing it, Greg, you hit it nail on the head, man. You're a better player. Okay, you're a better athlete, you're higher recruited, you're supposed to be able to match up with that no matter, even if they bring 10, 11, 12, 13, I don't care if they have 17 guys out there, at some point in time, no matter how the play is called, you have to execute. And that's where the execution side up front and losing the line of scrimmage is what I thought was very key to the start. And then after that drive, it seemed to snowball a little bit.
Let me ask you guys the same question. Greg Lewis, Dick Baird, Cam Cleland here, Husky Honks on 950 KJR. If they can't beat Montana, what makes us think they can beat Michigan?
Because you got to play every game that's on your schedule, and you can't let the last loss give you 2, 3, 4 losses. You got to get better every time you go out and practice. You got to get better. And the coaches got to do a better job of figuring out how to game plan against the next team. And so when they look at the film of Michigan, where's Michigan's weaknesses? Where are they, you know, at a disadvantage against the Huskies? And you have to exploit those. And then your players got to prepare better this week, work harder, understand what that felt like last week, mm-hmm. and come out with some passion and some smoke and vim and vigor. Because I tell you what, when I'm playing football, if I can beat the man across from me consistently every play, and the guy next to me and the guy next to me can do that, doesn't matter what uniforms they have on and where we're playing. If I can kick his, you know what, every single play, I got a chance to win. And that's what football is about. People who play football are a little bit crazy. If you're running into 300-pound guys and guys jumping on you and you're running to brick walls for a living or as a habit, then there's something in you that says it doesn't matter what happened last week. Right. I'm going to turn it on this time.
Cam?
Yeah, fellas, you know, we do this, and maybe it's fans. I'm not saying it's you. It's and I said this when I was on with Chuck and Buck yesterday. I said, we do this in college football, and we do it at nauseam. We say that once a game, okay, season's over. If you have a bad couple games or games over, season's over, correct? We would never do that in week three if you were watching the Seahawks. We'd never do it in the Mariners. We never do it in any other sport other than college football. We have a bad game, and then the life is over. These kids are going to get better week in and week out. Is there a shot versus Michigan? Absolutely. You go on the road, don't think Michigan can. They're young kids, 18 to 22 also. You think they're going to be perfect every single day? It drives me nuts that we do this in college football. That's because that's how the system is set up, that everyone believes once if you don't have a 1 or a 0 next year win-loss record, your season's a waste. I don't agree with that, and I think these guys can get better. Coaches will get better. Everybody will, and that's why you can go on the road and win.
Are they in a better position to maybe win Saturday because of how angry they are
and how fired up they are? That's a good point, Dave. How much
does that really mean Saturday?
It means a lot to me. And, you know, that's the competitor in me. That one thing I am is a competitor. And I came to play at the University of Washington because I consider myself a tough guy, too. And so for me, if I get my butt kicked, guess what? You're going to have to fight me every time you see me. And that's mm-hmm. the attitude that I hope these guys have after what happened out on the field on Saturday. Now you've stirred up that thing in me that says, you know what? I'm going to bring it to you now. I'm going to bring it to you.
He did, too. he was a bell cow.
Can you play Saturday, by the way?
Suit up! Like it. You know, maybe we could use your thickness. It's a good word for it now.
Cold word for fat people.
But... you know, we're going into a wonderful experience. The Big House is an amazing stadium. And what we'll get to do is watch it fill up because we're going to be there before. And I'm telling you, for these kids, this is a game that they'll remember the rest of their life. I mean, I watched mm-hmm. it on television, their game against Western
Michigan.
Whatever.
Western Michigan.
Western Michigan. Yeah. And you know what? That big stadium is awesome. And I remember when we went there and Hugh Millen won a great game for us with Mark Patterson. And you know, that was an amazing thing. But to look at 114,000 and think I'm not going to get COVID.
Well, hopefully they'll be able to rally with that. I've been talking to a couple guys today for Saturday's pregame show. And the hope is that, you know, they can feed off that. Maybe it is a good time for them to be going on the road and banding together and getting into a hostile environment and having 100,000 people against them. But obviously things have to change, right? A lot of things have to change. Play calling has to change. The motivation has to change. The performance has to change. And it's going to have to change fast if you're going to win this game on Saturday versus Michigan. Let's go back and talk more about the receiver situation, the offensive line. What happened to the offensive line? My God, all we did all offseason long is talk about how great this group is going to be. And they go out, as you said, Greg, and they play a very uncharacteristic game for them. So more with Greg, Coach Baird, Cam Cleveland, Husky Honks continue next right here on 950 KJR.
All in one. Now back to the Coors Light Honks. Frost-brewed Coors Light, keeping Seattle chill. Brought to you by your Northwest Chevy dealers on your home for the Huskies. Sports Radio 950, KJR.
All right, we're back. Husky Honks hanging out till 5 o'clock tonight. Pregame show from Ann Arbor, 1 p.m. Kickoff 5 o'clock on Saturday night right here live on 950 KJR. So Let's talk about the offensive coordinator. Let's talk about the play caller of the Huskies after he was shut out by Kent Bear for 55 minutes on Saturday. A lot of reasons why the offense struggled, but one of the most popular commentaries is by the fans regarding the guy calling the plays. There's no question about that. Offensive and defensive coordinators, man, everybody wants to talk about the OC and the DC. As long as I've been working for this radio station covering Husky football, the most unpopular people in the room every year are always the offensive and defensive coordinator. They are the first people to take crap from fans when things aren't going right. So, Cam, we'll start with you. You've seen the movie The Wolf of Wall Street, I assume, Cam, right?
I have.
Remember at the end of the movie when Jordan Belfort, played by DiCaprio, is talking to a crowd of people, I believe in New Zealand, and he walks up to the front row and says, "Sell me this pen. Sell me this pen. I want you to sell me, Cam, on why John Donovan is the right guy for, I believe, the second most important position on the UW coaching staff. Go."
Well, because first of all, I look at offense realistically. Offense, every play. I repeat myself multiple times because I want everybody to hear it. Offense is designed to win. Okay, that's how you work. From an offensive coordinator position, a situation going into that game, he called a great game on the first drive. As it settled in, situations changed. What does everybody really expect when you call a play, depending on how the defensive shifts and moves and what you're trying to do to call your offense, is to optimize the guys you have right now. That's what you're doing. I saw four games last year and I saw really good offense. I saw some ups and downs, but I have to give credit to defense on the other side. So what does everybody want? Open spread, the sexy inside handoff, the zone read, the move. You want the half field. You want to look like Mike Leach. You want to look like run and shoot. What is the optimal offense that everybody loves to see? Well, the one that I really love is the one that works. So if you want to tell me that immediately after one game, a coach should be what such, doesn't know what they're doing, I'm not on board with that at all. I'm not on board with it at all. No way in heck you're going to get me to bite into that.
Greg, John Donovan, go.
So, first of all, your players have to execute the game plan that you do give them. And I think that the kids struggled doing that yesterday. I don't think they necessarily executed what was given them. Secondly, you got to maximize the weapons that you have. And the weapons were very limited in the passing game. I don't remember one of our receivers getting behind the defense and being wide open defensively down the field. So I give them that. What I do think is fair is the criticism about the halftime adjustments. And I know this sort of seems like I'm backtracking on what I might have said on Saturday, but I believe it's fair to criticize the adjustment. After you've seen the defense for a half and what they're doing and what they're doing to stop you, now what's my counter move? And that's where a coordinator really does his job. He's got to take what's happening in the game in that moment and figure out how he counters that, whether it's using his game plan but switching some blocking techniques or changing the alignment or going with a different formation to change the look for the defense or adding a couple wrinkles. And I think it's fair to criticize him for not doing that, but there's some accountability on the kids and their execution, and there is, you know, a lack of bullets to some degree in the passing game at the very least.
Yeah, well, obviously when you don't have your top four receivers, that's going to be a factor. But I'm reluctant to point fingers at the offensive coordinator.
Since when?
Well, do I point fingers at anybody except you? You're the only one that doesn't know what's going
You've
on.
You've only got one finger, and it's always pointed at me.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that the offense was terrible.
Wow.
I mean, they just couldn't get on track. They couldn't get their stuff going. And yet, we had every chance to win the game. It went right down to the wire.
Sure.
I thought we were going to win.
Oh, yeah, with 2:42 left to go.
Absolutely.
Second to last drive.
And, you know, I really thought up until the last interception, which was kind of just throw it out there, I thought we were going to win the game.
Well, I think Dick brings up, and he Cam doesn't even, this is the greatness of Coach Baird. He brought up a great point and doesn't even know it. Why in a game that you were leading 7-3 for three quarters did you throw the ball 20 more times than you ran it?
Well, you want me to answer that question?
I do.
The point where I was going to make of
you
what
can,
happened.
You can answer, you can follow up whatever you want. Go ahead.
All right, here's my point on the offensive side of breaking it down of why some of the things started to happen when the wide receivers are hurt. You're losing a lot of experience in wide receivers. So going into this game plan, I'm looking at it. So now Coach Donovan has to, you mean to tell me, has to shift and adjust? Because as soon as you have an injury like that, you have to shift and adjust to tight end play. So now you're bringing in three tight ends, which I guarantee you during the week of practice, you did not take 4 and 5 periods and practice three tight end sets. And some of the guys that were in there, we're talking Sawyer, we're talking Giles, they weren't in some of the formations. So now your formations start to limit down because those guys weren't always practicing in those reps too, because they might not know. After that, now your play calling has to come down because you know the guys that were in there weren't getting this. The ones weren't getting everything. And then all of a sudden when you're there, now Dylan doesn't have the confidence in the guys that are out there. So then he starts to eyeball one person and really starts to struggle with the mindset of, I only got one option. I'm going to go to my safety valve. Well, it was Cade Otton. All those things start to factor into play, but it still doesn't give an excuse to execution. Like what Greg said, is that if I give you a play and you have 11 guys out there and three guys don't execute, the play's over. You have to execute.
Greg, were you surprised that we didn't see Sean McGrew in this game Saturday?
Well, I...
Or Kamari Pleasant?
Not necessarily, because I think the running backs were doing a really good job. Dick and I kind of focused on them for a little while, and they were running hard. They did excellent in the blitz pickup, and they had to help quite a bit on the pass protection, and they were sticking up in there, and they caught the ball well out of the backfield. I think those two guys, especially Newton, did a fantastic job running the ball, protecting, and being a part of the pass game. So I'm not sure that changing it to another running back would have made any real difference.
Were you surprised that they did throw the ball, especially with those receivers out, that they threw the ball as much as they did and ran the ball as little as they did?
Yeah, I think that's probably the one thing that, you know, boggles the mind just a little bit. What were they seeing that said we can't run the football? I know they, you know, we struggled in our pass block, in our run blocking to some degree, but to me, at that point, what you do is you simplify the playbook. You narrow it down to about 4 or 5 plays that we're going to run, and we're going to beat the man in front of us. We're going to knock him back, and we're going to get 4 and 5 yards. Because like you said, we were only down. We were either up, tied, or down 6 points at the most during that game. And we can win this game 4 yards at a time. And we didn't decide to do that.
Two guys that are really good receivers in the program didn't get a lot of balls thrown at them. The junior college transfer, Quentin Moore, is a good-looking kid on the hoof, and he's got excellent hands.
Yeah.
And I thought the freshman, Mark Redmond, reminds me a lot of Sample. He's built the same way. He's a good 6'6", 250 as a true freshman. Those two kids, I think, will be used more often in the pass game. When you go with a heavy 2-3 tight ends, you got to throw out of that every once in a while.
Yeah, let's do this. We're going to break. We'll talk about the game Saturday with Michigan. I want to get some thoughts from you guys on the game that Dylan had, and some were asking for number 7. Jimmy said after the game he was not thinking about going to Sam Heward at all in the game Saturday, but we'll get to that and get to the play of the quarterback, the matchup with the Wolverines on Saturday. Husky Honks, one more segment with them next on 950 KJ.
Ain't or more.
Now back to the Coors Light Honks. Frost-brewed Coors Light, keeping Seattle chill. Brought to you by your Northwest Chevy dealers on your home for the Huskies. Sports Radio 950, KJR.
All right, we're back talking about what was, let's face it, a terrible day in Husky football history Saturday over at UW. Fifth time, 6 if you include Penn State against Cincinnati, but the Bearcats were like a temporary 1AA team back then, so... Doesn't really matter. This is the fewest points. John Wilner, I know, is on with us next segment. He made the case this was one of the worst, if not the worst, offensive performances in college football history on Saturday when you score 7 points against an FCS team. You mentioned Kent Baird, Coach Baird, who just had his way with John Donovan in the final 55 minutes of that game. And I think, guys, the concern for me about John Donovan is that when I asked you guys, Cam, we'll start with you, about sell me on John Donovan, most people would say something like, well, because of his track record. He's proven it before. He's done it here. He did it there. He hasn't done it anywhere. I mean, he's got nothing on his resume. So we are putting what concerns me, and I'm willing to let it play out. You have no other choice, obviously. What concerns me is that you're putting your responsibility for the offense into the hands of a guy who has no track record of consistent success at all as an offensive play caller. Is that fair to be concerned about that?
I think it's fair to look at his experience. I do. I think that's certainly fair to say. Has he had the kind of success, the big bowl games, the championship run, the high program run in that? But everybody's got to start somewhere.
Sure.
And I'm not saying that Huskies is a place where you say, oh, let's cut our teeth as the Washington Huskies offensive coordinator. That's not what I'm saying. I'm going to continue to go back to the situation of heading into that last play where Cade Otton caught that 25-yard catch. The biggest play on the board was 16 yards.
Crazy.
16 yards.
Right.
So you do have to get a little bit more aggressive, I think. You got to push it down the field. Some of the situation, Devin Culp had to play the slot, guys. He had to play 50 snaps in the slot. Mm. Devin Culp's a tight end. That means that that's Giles Jackson's position. Did you happen to know that?
Yeah.
So if he's having to move out there and Giles is out there, how many reps do you think Giles got at the outside X and Z? Probably very limited. So you're down to your playbook. You're going, well, I guess I can't go over the top because Giles is not, I mean, he's pretty fast, but he's not a big receiver threat. And you're looking at Devin Culp running the inside. He's not fast shifty. There goes your fly sweeps. There goes your motions. There goes your change of directions. Mm-hmm. So all the things that you think going into that game plan were just open and ready to rock. It probably came down from 300 plays to about 75 where he felt comfortable calling.
Would you have considered number 7?
Absolutely not. This is not an opportunity to throw a young guy in whose confidence you can beat up, who, if we're not protecting well, who could get injured. So it's not a situation to panic. And, again, that game and if you're talking about on Saturday, we were one play away from taking the lead in that game. All you need is to execute on one or two or three plays. And I go back to something I said last segment. You still had an opportunity to win this game four plays at a time by handing the ball off four times at a time and getting push out of your offensive line. You don't need Heward to come in to hand the ball off consistently down the field.
I totally agree. He's going to be a really nice quarterback. But right now, I think it's a little early to be throwing him out there. And I totally agree. I think hopefully they'll get O'Brien back and we'll be able to redshirt Heward because he needs that ear in the weight room. Coach got a decision to make, but I am positive they're just going to go with Dylan Morris through the Michigan
guys, game. You're right, Coach. Sam's not the answer yet. He's just not the answer yet. It's not in that situation where you look at him and go, can Sam come in? Do you believe that he can just walk into this offense and elevate the offense if the weapons aren't there? Does he have the elite arm? Does he have the speed? Does he have all of that? Does he have the playmaking ability? None of us know that yet. And right now, from everything we've watched on film and practice and seeing it, Dylan Morris is a better playmaker right now. He can be. Okay, he threw the ball a little bit with a little velocity, some of the catches. Taj Davis needs to make that sliding catch on the sideline. Some of those things need to happen. He needs a little bit more help. Some of the throws are under pressure. They were bullets. But this is, right now, it's Dylan Morris. It just clearly is.
You know, it's interesting. Their quarterback won the game with his feet, not with his arm. And when he started running the ball, that completely changed. We let him out a number of times. And, he'd just see the hole open up with the pass rush. And our linebackers are 15, 18 yards deep. He'd just take off. And he had a couple of big runs that I thought were the biggest plays they had in the game.
I think the concern, Greg, for Michigan Saturday is if those guys aren't back at wide receiver and you're the Wolverines, you do the same thing. You try and stop the run and make Dylan Morris beat you.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, that, any solid coach worth his,
of course,
grit at all is looking at what we're looking at. And if we come out and we have those guys in those jerseys at the wide receiver positions, they're going to load the box up. And so what does that mean? That means you have to find a way as an offensive coordinator, as an offensive line coach, to get your guys to win the one-on-one battles. Michigan is not fancy. They're not.
They're smash mouth
football, and that's what this game's going to be. But what that also means is the score may stay relatively close, and so you can still win that game with your tight ends, with shorter pass routes, with a strong running game. So right now what I'm doing is I'm in there in that offensive line meeting room, and I'm telling them they got to win this football game for us on Saturday.
Well, I want to see something out of the offense this weekend, Cam. Again, that doesn't mean score 55 points. I understand that.
Just score one more than them.
I get the fact that they're banged up. I get the fact they're playing a much better defense, and that might mean grind it out and find a way to win it in the fourth quarter. That could impress people from John Donovan. I just think, to repeat what I said Saturday, I want John Donovan to show me Saturday why Jimmy Lake put faith in him. So show us.
Show us. And if I'm okay, I'll put my coordinator hat on for a minute and I'll just pretend like I know what I'm talking about. But
okay,
if I'm
let's pretend
because I like to do it a lot. This is the good part about having a mic and not having to write it up on the whiteboard in front of everybody. I'm gonna flip it. I'm going to get all those young wide receivers like what Coach Britt, I'm going to get them in the reps in practice right away. I'm going to come out and spread. I'm going to come out in four wide. I'm going to look completely different going into this game, and I'm going to have a game plan that says that, of course, I'm going to practice my bread and butter, but why would I run power and lead an outside zone versus the kind of front that Michigan's going to show you, knowing that they're going to put it in Dylan Morris's hand? It's like, fine, if we're going into this game, I'm bringing something that they have never seen on film, and I might practice a whole package that they're going to come out and go, what are they in? We're not ready for this, because at this point in this situation, let's do it.
I'm in. I love it. That's exactly
You're smarter than me.
What I'm talking about. That's what I want to see Saturday. So I am looking forward to finding out Saturday why John Donovan was hired to run the offense for Washington, and I can't wait to see it work in person on Saturday at 8 o'clock Eastern Time, 5 o'clock Pacific, 1 o'clock pregame. Cam, Dick, Greg, we'll see you Saturday at the Big House, boys. Go Dogs, all right?
Go Dogs.
That's the Honks for a week. We're going to break. John Wilner coming up next right here on Softy and Dick on 950K.